This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are we going to finally get some peace between Russia and Ukraine? We'll talk about that. I'll make a prediction. Did Adam Schiff commit espionage? Sean Davis joins us. Carol Roth joins us. We have all kinds of economic numbers, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, let's talk a little bit of foreign policy, which we don't do a lot of on the show. As you know, I'm the ugliest of ugly American. We will talk when things matter overseas, but I care about my country. That's what I care about. I don't focus anywhere else but here. But we are involved. We're involved with this Russia-Ukraine mess. That wasn't your choice. It certainly wasn't my choice. Don't know why we chose to do it, but we are involved. We've been heaping weapons onto the Ukrainians. When Joe Biden was president, he would publicly brag about the fact that we're sending them all kinds of stuff. Mitch McConnell, what's this about? We're involved. Whether you want us to be or whether I want us to be, we are involved. And Trump has a meeting upcoming with Vladimir Putin. Before we get to that, Trump's comments and everything else, let's talk about life a little bit. Let me give you a little bit of advice. And those who have made this mistake are going to nod their head. And those who haven't will probably think I'm crazy, but I'm going to give you a critical, critical piece of advice for your life. At some point in time, you are going to have somebody close to you getting a divorce. Marriage is breaking up. Maybe it's your sister, maybe it's your brother, maybe it's your parents, maybe it's your neighbor, maybe it's your cousin, I don't know. At some point in your life, just the percentages say it, someone in your life you are close to is going to want a divorce, try to get a divorce. And in that moment, because you're a good person, you are going to want to do the thing so many people want to do. Step in. Step in and fix it. Hey, let's have dinner together. No, let's go out. No, she's not that bad. Take her back. No, he's not that bad. Listen, there's just a misunderstanding. You are going to want to get involved. I have seen this so many times in my life, and 100% of the time, not 99, not 98, not 50, 100% of the time, it goes so, so poorly for the person who tries to get involved. Because what happens is, in a marriage, when it breaks up, sadly, there's all this personal animosity, all this history, all this bad blood, bitterness inside. And you step in trying to fix it. You don't fix it. You get burned. You get sucked into it, and you get burned. That's how it works every single time. Stay out of it. Pray for them and let it go. What I just said was the United States of America's foreign policy since our founding. Not our problem. Stay out of it. Not our problem. Oh, what? France and Britain are fighting again? Not our problem. There's a war in Africa. What a shock. Not our problem. They're fighting. Not our problem. Why? Because the founders knew. George Washington, go read George Washington's farewell address. He addressed this specifically. He knew when you try to stick your nose in other people's fights, other people's problems, you don't solve them and you get burned. The history of this region, Russia, Ukraine, is long. I could sit here and do an hour-long history rant on the Crimean War, but I wouldn't want to bore you to death. That was roughly the time of our Civil War where there were all the Brits, the Russians, they were fighting over this exact piece of ground for this exact reason, the warm water port, the resources, to everything else. We could talk about Joseph Stalin starving millions of Ukrainians to death. This marriage, the whole Russia-Ukrainian marriage, is full of more fights and bitterness and knockdown dragouts, and someone had to call the cops, than you can possibly imagine. Now fast forward to the year of our Lord 2025, and of course they're fighting again, they're killing each other again, it's all ugly, it's all terrible, and the United States of America wants to stop it. Donald Trump, to his credit, I should point out, just like you, the reason you stepped in when your sister was getting a divorce. You're a good person, you want the fighting to stop, you want healing there, you want to stop it. It's a mistake. Here was Trump talking about the coming meeting with Putin.
This is really a feel-out meeting, a little bit. And President Putin invited me to get involved. He wants to get involved. I believe he wants to get it over with. Now, I've said that a few times, and I've been disappointed. The money that's been spent and the death is incredible. It's the worst thing that's happened, by far the worst that's happened since World War II. So I'm going in to speak to Vladimir Putin, and I'm going to be telling him, you got to end this war. You got to end it. Well, we're going to have a meeting with Vladimir Putin, and at the end of that meeting, probably in the first 2 minutes, I'll know exactly whether or not a deal can be made.
How do you know that?
Because that's what I do. I make deals.
He's a good man. He is. I understand the man has his flaws like all of us, but he really does want peace. He wants the fighting to stop. He wants the dying to stop. You don't want your sister to get a divorce. Let's have a meeting. But when you sit down with your sister and you tell her, well, look, think about the kids. Look, you don't want to split up the family, the income, but who's going to get the house? It's going to go with her the same way, well, Trump knows it's going to go with Zelensky.
I was a little bothered by the fact that Zelensky was saying, well, I have to get constitutional approval. I mean, he's got approval to go into war and kill everybody, but he needs approval to do a land swap, because there'll be some land swapping going on. I know that through Russia and through conversations with everybody for the good of Ukraine. Good stuff, not bad stuff. Also, some bad stuff for both. So there's good and there's bad. Russia's occupied a big portion of Ukraine. They've occupied some very prime territory. We're going to try and get some of that territory back for Ukraine. Now, I may leave and say good luck, and that'll be the end. I may say this is not going to be settled.
I know what he wants. I know why he wants it. It's not going to work. Look, I hope it does, actually. There's nobody better at brokering peace deals than Donald Trump, but I think this is one of those situations where we need to stay out. We should have stayed out from the very beginning. Sad as it may be, Ukraine is not a NATO country. We had no obligation to go in. Russia could have taken what they'd taken without close to this amount of loss of life, and this thing would have been over a long time ago. But instead, these nutball communists had to step in. Joe Biden and all the dirty CIA communists all around him wanted a whole bunch of people to die, didn't care, the military-industrial complex cheering it on. And that's another aspect of stepping into this divorce. We're stepping in to get our sister not divorced. We're stepping in to make sure she doesn't get a divorce, all while people are standing on the sidelines cheering, divorce, 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 people like John Bolton.
What do you make of the fact that Putin has now been invited to Alaska?
Well, it's very gracious of Putin to come to former Russian America for this summit. This is not quite as bad as Trump inviting the Taliban to Camp David to talk about the peace negotiations in Afghanistan, but it certainly reminds one of that. The only better place for Putin than Alaska would be if the summit were being held in Moscow. So the initial setup, I think, is a great victory for Putin. He's a rogue leader of a pariah state, and he's going to be welcomed into the United States. Second, I have a feeling this is sliding very quickly in Russia's direction. I have to say, from the strategic perspective, from the U.S. interest perspective, this was not a good day.
These people are monsters, and they want this thing to continue forever. John Bolton and his stupid mustache would sit there and watch every single Ukrainian die and go to sleep every single night thinking he's the good guy. And by the way, Vladimir Putin, yeah, he's the total piece of crap, complete murderer. I get all that. He's not a rogue leader. Why do they say that? He's the leader of Russia, one of the most powerful countries on earth. He's the leader. He's, by the way, a fairly popular leader in the country that holds the most nuclear weapons on the planet. He's not some tin pot dictator in the Middle East somewhere. He is the leader of Russia. You can hate that all you want, but he is. This is our crappy situation. We continue to stick our nose in this situation, and it continues to go poorly for us. Let's hope next week I'm sitting here and saying, wow, that was wrong. We did it. Peace at last. I pray to God that's coming, but hasn't happened yet. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Adam Schiff, speaking of making you uncomfortable, probably squirming in his chair right now. You can just see that bobblehead of his going back and forth, because I think maybe he might end up in prison. Oh, he's in deep trouble. We'll talk to Sean Davis about that next. Before we talk to Sean Davis about that, let me talk to you about your mood. Have you noticed, as you've gotten older, that you get down more? Almost without explanation. I'm not talking about watching Rudy or Old Yeller. I'm talking about just kind of melancholy without explanation. That's because your levels are off. And today, here's what we do. We go looking for answers, and we find a clinic. There's a clinic on every corner now. Hey, just come on in. We'll inject you with this. You'll feel better. You think that's what you need? Injections? Or do you think natural herbal supplements might be the better route? Try Chalk. Just try Chalk for 90 days. Anything. Try their Chalk Lip Powder in the morning. Try their male vitality stack. Have your T levels jacked through the roof. Try your female vitality stack if you're a lady. Just try some natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Give it 90 days. If it doesn't work, go down to that clinic. Try it. Chalk.com/JesseTV gets you a big old fat discount. We'll be back. Did Adam Schiff leak classified intel about Donald Trump? I mean, look, let's be honest. We don't have to ask stupid questions. Of course he did. But I think maybe we have somebody who's going to testify to the fact. At least John Solomon, Just the News, says that's the case. Joining me now, someone who knows all kinds of details. He knows where all the bodies have been buried. He's been talking about it forever. My buddy Sean Davis with the Federalist. Sorry, CEO and co-founder of the Federalist. Sean, that's a crime, right?
It used to be. Well, it's a crime if you're a Republican to do things, but if you leak classified information and you're a Democrat, apparently it's not.
Yeah, apparently it's not. So, okay, first, let's dig into exactly that, Sean, before we get into the specific Adam Schiff stuff. Why is it that way? Why is it Republicans burn in the government and Democrats don't burn in the government? What has created that horrible environment?
It's a great question. I think there's probably two factors there. The first is that generally the left has taken over every major institution of power, whether it's corporate America or academia or law enforcement and intelligence at the federal level. So that was very much the case until recently when Trump was reelected and started doing Black Fridays and Black Mondays every other week to get rid of dead weight. And then I think the other issue is that until recently, the right generally thought that it was bad to use its political power. The left never had a problem with it. So when the left got in power, it used all its little people in the institutions to destroy its enemies. And so they played for keeps and they played to win. And I think Republicans are now finally waking up to the reality is that you cannot win a political battle if you don't choose to use political power whenever you have it.
Okay, so that brings us to Adam Schiff. I remember Adam Schiff got a pardon from Joe Biden, big old air fingers quote there, because I think we all know that drooling dementia patient didn't pardon anybody, but he did get a pardon of some kind. Someone signed the frigging pardon. Is he free and clear on all this stuff?
No, he's not. So I think there's two reasons probably he's not. The main one is that that pardon, even assuming it's valid, assuming that Biden signed it, was only related to his work, I believe, on the J6 committee and his J6 nonsense. I don't believe it extended at all to what he was doing with his Russian collusion hoax conspiracy. And then number two, in order for a pardon to be valid, you actually have to accept it. My recollection was that Adam Schiff said he didn't need it or he rejected it. But either way, I don't think that pardon covers him at all for crimes he may have committed while he was running and may still be running the Russia collusion hoax.
Okay, Ed Martin, I love the guy. What's he doing right now?
Well, he's running the weaponization task force within DOJ, and I believe he was also just tapped by the Attorney General to be a special counsel looking at mortgage fraud, allegedly, by Letitia James, the AG who went after Trump on non-existent paperwork crimes, and after Adam Schiff, because it appears, at least if you listen to the HUD secretary, Bill Pulte, it certainly looks like Adam Schiff may have committed mortgage fraud by claiming as a primary residence a place that was not his primary residence.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so look, when people hear mortgage fraud, Sean, that they don't hear high crimes and misdemeanors, right? They don't think prison time. But how serious of a crime is this?
Well, paperwork crime, which is what James accused and got Trump convicted of in New York, she was saying he was putting down fraudulent appraisals for Mar-a-Lago, that he wasn't using the tax appraisal that the county had, which everyone knows is only for tax purposes, not for total value purposes. And that he overstated his Mar-a-Lago value so he could get loans using it as collateral. So on the terms that she has created under her rules, this is a very, very serious crime that she and Schiff may have committed. And I think the way the right needs to look at things now is that you have to go after the left as good and as hard as they went after you. I wanted a different set of rules. I wanted the actual rule of law and pushed for that for a long time. Our side lost. The other side decided they were going to put their opponents in prison. Those are the rules we have now. So those are the rules they're going to get to play by.
Okay, J.D. Vance came out recently and he said he thinks we're going to see indictments, real indictments. In fact, he said, I believe it was a lot of indictments. Now, I'm as cynical as anybody, but when the vice president is saying that, that sure is dumping quite a hot potato in the lap of the attorney general unless he knows some of these things are coming. John, are we going to see government people go to prison?
I hope so, although I'll tell you, I'm getting tired of being Charlie with the football, trying to kick it, and then Lucy pulls it away, which is what the last like 8 years have felt like. So I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but I will say this time feels different. The facts we're getting are different. The transparency we're getting is different. And we have a very different Trump and a very different Trump administration in office now than we did the first time. And I don't think they're messing around. You know, the FBI was sent to rifle through his house, to rifle through his wife's underwear drawer. They denied him security that led him to getting shot in the head. They tried to make him die in prison and bankrupt him. I don't think he's playing around anymore, and I don't think the people working for him are playing around. And so to me, it feels different. It feels like something is coming and people are going to get indicted and hopefully convicted for their crimes.
Well, let's hope so. Sean, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
We're going to talk to Julio Rosas about D.C. and what's happening there. Before we talk to Julio, look, I know sometimes work can be stressful, right? Things don't go well at work and you just want to punch something because it's so frustrating. Have you ever been there? Me too. So that's why you need some dream powder from Beam. You see, dream powder will put you to sleep at night, but not with drugs. 100% drug-free, you see. Dream powder is a cup of hot chocolate with just natural things in it, like reishi and melatonin and magnesium, all these things in it. I sip on a cup of hot chocolate. Like tonight, I'm going to sit down, blood pressure is going to be up, I'm going to have a cup of hot chocolate, it's going to put me right to sleep. and I'll wake up feeling good. That's the difference with Beam. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
And it just, as we go to break, I should note that the most violent moment in recent history in D.C. was January 6th. And it was an attack on the United States Capitol by a lot of people who were doing it in the name of Donald Trump. And it included the people who were hurt, included members of law enforcement.
I love that network. Joining me now, my buddy Julio Rosas, national correspondent with another network I love, The Blaze, the United States Marine. Julio, I know these muggings and shootings and whatnot are dangerous, but they're nothing compared to January 6th.
Yeah, so one, she's wrong, and I noted that when I posted that clip. I literally wrote the book on it. You see it over my shoulder. But, I mean, setting aside the fact that the BLM riots, in D.C. in particular, lasted for a lot longer than January 6th, and the damage inflicted was on everybody, not just Congress. And the effects of those riots and protests are still being affected today, which is why we're talking about this current National Guard activation. But what I find very interesting is that the Democrats who are now criticizing this National Guard deployment by President Trump had zero issue with keeping the Guardsmen for January 6th for months, long after there was any sort of threat to the Capitol building. I mean, the threat basically ended on January 7th, right? And so now all of a sudden when the president wants to use the National Guard to help protect citizens, you know, the citizens and the residents and the tourists who are now coming to the Capitol, that's authoritarianism, this is fascism. And so it's just, you know, a highlighting how when it comes to protecting the elites of this country, no expense is spared, but when it comes to protecting the taxpayer, protecting private citizens, well, no, we can't do that because that's racist or that's fascist in nature.
Julio, you've spent a lot more time on the streets of D.C. than I have, by the grace of God. I hate that dump, but you're back there a lot. How bad is it?
Well, it hasn't returned to pre-2020 levels in terms of the crime rate. I moved to the D.C. area back in 2017. I lived in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia during that six-year period, and there was a noticeable shift in terms of public safety after 2020 because of the effects of the pandemic, and then, of course, like I was saying, the BLM defund the police movement. And so it's certainly not as safe as it could be, but also as it should be, right? I mean, the fact that Mexico City is safer than Washington, D.C., the fact that Bogota, Colombia is safer than D.C. I mean, that's a stain on us, right? That shows that, one, it's a policy choice, because even if a cartel ravaged country like Mexico or Colombia can get at least their capital safe for its citizens, why can't we do that? Why do we have to be concerned about all these other places around the world, but the place that represents one of the places that represents the country, our capital, that needs to be led in disarray for a variety of reasons. I mean, that doesn't compute with me, and it doesn't compute with a lot of American citizens, especially now when we see that, Cash Patel was saying this at the briefing, that overall the murder rate nationwide is starting to go down. It's still, like I said, very high compared to what it was pre-2020, but this is all by choice. This is all by policy. And so if the local leaders in D.C. are insistent on this, ineffectual policy proposal or policy when it comes to criminal justice and law enforcement, then it is within President Trump's power and purview, since it is a federal district, to actually do something else to see if that's going to work to address this significant problem.
Maybe part of the problem is this moron is one of the police chiefs in D.C.
What the chain of command is now?
What does that mean?
Well, is it Pam Bondi speaking to the mayor, speaking to you, or how does this work?
So the executive order is clear. The president has requested MPD services, and our home rule charter outlines the process. The president designated Attorney General Bondi as his proxy to request services through me.
we have a chief that doesn't know what the chain of command is. She's not a one-off, Julio. We've seen police chiefs across the country in various cities, Cincinnati most recently, that are obviously communist activists. How many of these people are in charge of the major metropolitan police departments?
Well, it seems to be all of them, or nearly all of them. I mean, it's not even, for example, the police departments, but like in Los Angeles, when the fires were raging out of control earlier this year, there was problems with the police chief as well. It was you know, system-wide over there. Don't get me wrong, it wasn't just her fault. But, I mean, it just shows that this idea, again, from 2020, I mean, all this really started in 2020. I know I keep coming back to it, but there's a reason for it. Again, because especially now that the media wants to talk about January 6th, it's like, well, there are all these policies that were implemented, maybe not federally, but locally and statewide, that has led to disastrous results. People have died. People have had their quality of life ruined for various reasons and from various departments of a city or state. And so it's unfortunate that we're still dealing with these effects because, as I was saying earlier, this is all by choice. And, you know, thankfully, with D.C. being a federal district, okay, President Trump can have a much easier time kind of taking control of the situation to try to fix it. But you see what's happening in New York City with Mondami seemingly about to become the New York mayor and all of his crazy radical ideas. You know, I don't know. It just seems like if you want to be a liberal, you got to have this sense of self-harm or you know, they can't govern themselves, right? I mean, all of these things that they're proposing and they want to put into effect, it's had disastrous results, but people keep voting for them. You have Brandon Johnson. He's the mayor of Chicago. He has historic unapproval rate, and yet people still voted for him. And, you know, so I don't know. You know, for those other places, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, yeah, there was a rightward shift in some of those cities with this recent election, but it's not like Chicago or Los Angeles or New York are going to flip red anytime soon because it's a managed decline and people just get used to it and people are just like, oh, well, it's just part of living in a city, when it doesn't have to be. I don't understand why people don't really understand that it doesn't have to be this way. But I think it's just because the solutions to their problems is seen as racist, it's seen as xenophobic, or seen as you know, fascist in nature. And so I don't know what the solution is, to be honest. I don't know if there's going to anything turn around anytime soon, but hopefully DC can be a case study, you know, with this upcoming deployment, to show, yeah, like, yes, you need law and order in these places to actually get things back on track.
Julio, what are we expecting specifically about this deployment, right? We saw the press conference. We heard, you know, 1,000 National Guard troops, and they're taking over the D.C. Metro Police Department, things like that. But, okay, what does that look like on the ground?
So my understanding is that the National Guardsmen, in addition to providing infrastructure security, which is kind of what they're used for in civil disturbances, they're basically going to be force protection for the federal assets that have also been surged to the region, to the city. And so that frees up manpower, right? I mean, instead of having federal agents protecting an asset or infrastructure, they can actually go out and be proactive, because then those National Guardsmen take their place to stand guard. And Jesse, you and I all know about firewatch and gear guarding and all that. It's not the most glorious thing, but there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that job, and it's a force multiplier, right? So again, it remains to be seen exactly how it will play out, but I think it sends a message at the end of the day to the criminal element in the city, which has run rampant for some time, that playtime's over. And, you know, we've seen it be effective at the border. We've seen it be effective in Los Angeles after the initial wave of anti-ICE riots. Those have died down in Los Angeles pretty significantly. So I personally don't see a problem with using the resources that the president has within his purview to go out and activate this particular asset and personnel.
Did you ever fall asleep on Firewatch? Be honest.
No, but I fell asleep during a classroom during boot camp, and I got caught by the first sergeant.
Oh, what'd they do to you? Tell me what they did.
Oh, they ran me out of the classroom and had to go to the sand pit.
All right. Donald Trump said he's going to send the military after the cartels. What's that mean?
That's kind of the question. So in the ideal scenario is that we are working with countries in Latin America to have their permission to work in conjunction with their militaries to go after these targets. But Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum, she has said repeatedly, she just said it last week, again saying no, U.S. military is not allowed. We're not going to allow it because of national sovereignty. Of course, when it comes to national sovereignty within their, its own borders with the cartels, that's a different story. And she even boasted about how the federal agencies like DEA, FBI, that work within Mexico, they are under the strictest regulations in all of Latin America. So, you know, it basically makes it harder for them to work with their partners. And so then the question is, okay, so then do we do, you know, Star Spangled Banner across the Rio Grande into Mexico? Yeah, I don't know if that's particularly smart, but I will say that, you know, we've spent vast amounts of money, billions of dollars. We've lost thousands of troops recently in recent wars across the Middle East. We've spent a lot of money in Ukraine to defend its borders. And so, of course, naturally people ask, well, why can't we use that same power and might within our own hemisphere, but in particular with our southern neighbor that has a lot of issues? You know, I love Mexico, but let's be real. There's a lot of significant issues that impact us directly. So the order has been given by President Trump, as far as we know. And so that's why the Pentagon is currently trying to figure out exactly what that means, because there's also the legal issues that come with it, with, you know, rules of war and warfare. So I don't expect, you know, the first Marine Division to go across into Tijuana, not on a weekend for liberty, but for, you know, in terms of a combat. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know about that, Jesse. This is new territory, right? But again, there's a reason for that, because the status quo, simply approaching the cartels through a law enforcement perspective, strictly through a law enforcement apparatus, that hasn't worked. There's been some successes, don't get me wrong, but the end result is we're still dealing with fentanyl. There's all these new drugs that are even more powerful than fentanyl coming across the border and killing Americans needlessly. So understandably, that's why Trump was elected, right? And one of the reasons is because, not just with the war on drugs, but just in general, is that the status quo can't remain. There has to be new ideas, radical ideas, you know, seemingly radical ideas, in order to finally get these problems resolved once and for all, because we're decades into this and there's no end in sight.
I just want to note that there's no evidence that I ever went to Tijuana that was strictly against the rules. Thank you, Julio. I appreciate it. We'll be back. Well, we got inflation numbers that I guess I'm supposed to be happy about. 2.7%. No one's ever going to convince me why it has to be at 2%. I don't understand why I'm supposed to accept that. So I guess 2.7% is something I'm supposed to celebrate. Now my money has only gone down 2.7%. But I don't know. Maybe Carol Roth can make sense of this, since she's now a 2 times New York Times best-selling author, recovering former investment banker. All right, Carol, woohoo! I'm 2.7% poorer, I guess.
Not only that, Jesse, but everybody's very excited about data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the BLS, yeah, which last week everybody hated. But now this week, their statistics are right on the money and fantastic. And yes, you should be thrilled that, you know, we have the value of your purchasing power continuing to decline. It's a very interesting scenario, I guess, in the scheme of, if we believe the numbers, which, you know, I don't. I think all of the numbers are trash, but that's what we're supposed to do. I guess the good news is that inflation has not, you know, picked back up meaningfully again. I guess the good news is that should the data stay where it is, that we will likely get a Fed rate cut, maybe a quarter of a percent in September. Not that I'm sure that that's going to do much for anybody's life, but everyone seems to be very excited about it. And I do feel a little bit like I'm living in bizarro world, because some days people like certain things and then the next day they don't. And it just depends on, you know, who's in charge and whose mouth is coming out of. But, you know, the reality is that we had epic inflation under the Biden administration. migration. It has come down, but it's still a rate of change. And that means you are still paying more every single day, every single month than you did the day and the month before. And that's not a good thing for cost of living, which is what Americans care about right now.
No, that's a fact. You know what? We'll come back to that. We'll circle back to that, to use that old Jen Psaki term. Carol, I have a completely nerdy detail that I'm curious about. It just popped into my head. How did they get these numbers? I mean, I talk about this every day, and I honestly don't know. How do they get these jobs numbers? How did they get the inflation numbers? We just accept that these are numbers that then, of course, they always have to revise because the numbers are a bunch of crap, which, of course, begs the question how they got them in the first place.
Yeah, well, if you go with something like the jobs numbers, they're going out and they're doing surveys. So there's two different surveys. There's an establishment survey where they go out to companies and they survey them. And then there's a household survey where they go out to households. Part of the reason why the numbers have become trash is because the companies and households don't want to fill out this information. They don't want to give competitive data to the government, and they have other things to do. So it's harder for them to collect that. The BLS is actually relies on a lot of the other parts of the government, such as the Census Bureau under Commerce to gather this information, which again is kind of a head scratcher. You know, when you think about something like jobs, I don't know. I mean, the government takes money out of everybody's paycheck every pay period. You would think that the IRS would have a real clear picture on who's employed and who's not employed every single pay period. So it seems to me this is a technology issue. The administration certainly is plugged in with some of the tech titans, and you would think that there would be a better way to gather information from stuff that we know is true and know is happening versus sending out random surveys for jobs, for example. And I think that that's one of the things that the new head of BLS, EJ Antoni, who's absolutely fantastic, should be looking into. He should be looking into, do we need to change the methodologies and way that we have collected data in order to get more accurate data? And by the way, the answer to that is yes. Yes, they do.
Okay, now let's circle back again, Carol, shall we, about these rate cuts. This Michelle Bowman, this Fed chairman, Fed official, says we got three of them probably coming. Do we? That certainly sounds good.
I mean, maybe. Things change on a month-to-month basis as data comes out. She is one of the two Fed governors that dissented and felt like we'd already should have had a rate cut. So it's not surprising that she should feel that. But there is a board of governors that has 12 different members on it. So she can feel that and the Fed may not go along with it. So that's part of the challenge here. You know, I contend that we had 15 years of zero interest rate policy or near zero interest rate policy, businesses and consumers loaded up on debt. I do not think that if they cut rates by 25 basis points, a half a percent, even 0.75%, even a full percent, that that is going to unleash some kind of crazy demand for debt that is going to shift the economy, because consumers are already pretty tapped out from a debt standpoint, as are companies. Yes, you know, it will help in certain areas, also have some issues for potentially for savers, but it's really, I don't think it matters. There's something called the neutral rate, which is this theoretical rate where the Fed's monetary policy actually impacts whether we get inflation or we don't. And I just don't think that we're there yet. So I do think we could get it, but the Fed is always wrong. You've got a whole group of people with their own agenda. So in terms of trying to figure out what it is that they're going to do versus what they probably should do, you know, that's a whole other thing.
Okay, so why are we going to get rate cuts, Carol? Is it because the economy is stabilized? Is it because the tariff thing has worked out okay? Has it worked out okay? Is it because of Donald Trump's ongoing public threats for Fed Chairman Jerome Powell? Look, I mean, he does that stuff for a reason. Why are we actually getting the cut?
Well, that's, again, that goes back to, you know, why are they doing things versus why should they do things? And it's kind of hard to say. Their dual mandate is to stabilize employment as well as inflation. Obviously, we know that they haven't stabilized inflation, but we're getting back towards their target, which you and I both believe is above the target that it should be, which is zero. But that's basically their mandate. We're looking at jobs numbers now that are pretty weak. And so there's a concern that if you don't get ahead of that by starting to cut rates, then you could end up seeing an impact with you know, negative jobs and have that reverberate through the economy. So that's what the Fed is trying to do. They're trying to thread a needle of managing the job situation while at the same time not restoking inflation. And as I said, I think at this point in time, they have room to do that. I think they should have done it a long time ago. But I also think they've been wrong at every turn, right? That they you know, came in and did too much support during COVID. You know, they waited too long to cut rates. You know, they told us there wasn't going to be inflation, it was going to be transitory. I mean, they've been wrong at every turn. And by the way, it's not just Powell. It's Yellen before Powell. It's Bernanke before Yellen. You know, it's the institution itself is rotten to the core. And that is basically the problem. So it's ridiculous that we have to sit around and hang on their every word. When I started on Wall Street about 30 years ago, you know, this wasn't in play. This wasn't something that we spent really any time thinking about. It was kind of something that went on in the background. And now the fact that you know, this is, you know, we've got people talking about this on social media and the president's talking about it, it just goes to show how central planning's taken over every aspect of our life. And it just really isn't a healthy thing for us, for the economy, and for the future, you know, financial security of the country.
Okay, Carol. So, why is the jobs market not gotten better? It seems like every day we have a press conference about that they're investing $100 billion, they're hiring 15,000 workers. We see great headlines. I see great headlines. We talk about them on this show, but the jobs numbers are not there. Why?
Well, I think it depends on, you know, the perspective and the way that you're looking at it. I think if you think about what's happened, it actually isn't bad news. It just looks like bad news from the headline. Because what we've had to do is we have this crazy amount of government spending. And what we're trying to do is reduce government spending and shift you know, dollars that are spends and the labor force into the private market. You also have a lot of illegals who are in the country and have now been deported, and we're keeping the border secure. So from my perspective, with those shifts, the illegals coming out of the job market, the government workers coming out of the job market, it's going to take some time for the private sector to, you know, readjust, to reabsorb the government workers, to settle in, you know, now that there are no illegals in the job market. So you would have expected that we would see a trajectory like this. Unfortunately, there are too few people who are good at messaging, and we're not getting this messaging across. But I don't see anything wrong with it. These things don't happen overnight. It takes time. And I think it's trending in the right direction. But you would expect, if you're making strides in those areas, that you're going to see jobs, you know, coming down on a net headline basis. One of the really positive things we've seen is the percentage or the shift in the number of jobs between, you know, native-born Americans versus immigrants, including illegal immigrants. And I think that that shift, you know, has been very positive. And so as the economy and the jobs market normalizes, we'll see really positive outcomes from the things that are happening. But again, this doesn't happen overnight. We're turning around a really big ship. It's not going to happen from one month to the next.
Okay, Carol, let's shift gears here and talk about tariffs. We keep getting these delays on a tariff war with China. We just got another word. There's another 90-day delay. We're going to delay this. We're going to delay that. It almost seems like we don't want to have this little tariff war with China. What's going on?
Well, you know, I've argued from the beginning that it's very challenging for us to go cold turkey from China, particularly because they have access to very important things like rare earth elements that are critical for us, you know, to do everything from build ships to have weapons manufactured. And so the idea that we could all of a sudden get crazy tough on them and not suffer enormous repercussions, it just didn't make sense going in. So I think that this is a very difficult negotiation. There are a lot of things that I think people would like to see from it, stronger intellectual property protection and the like. And I just think that China is playing the long game. They know the hand that they have, which is very strong right now. And they think in much longer cycles than we do, and they have the ability to wait things out. So I do think that this is going to take some time. And unfortunately, Jesse, I think that people who are all in on the fact that, you know, manufacturing is going to wholesale move back to the United States, or that we're going to get, you know, some of these things on the wish list, I hope I'm proven wrong. But I think, you know, they may come out with some headlines around these things, but when it comes to the reality of, you know, does this change the situation for intellectual property holders, for manufacturing, and so on and so forth, I think it's going to be a lot more sizzle than steak.
Carol Roth, thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it. Lighten the mood. Next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood, and I have really, really enjoyed the meltdown from the communists about Trump stepping in to clean up D.C. Look, we don't have to cover it again. We talked about it yesterday, but Democrats want you raped and murdered. They're not soft on crime. They don't have a different view of criminal justice. They believe in letting murderers and rapists loose to hurt you and your daughter and your mother and your wife. That's what they believe. They want your son murdered in the streets. They want that because it destabilizes society, and so they freaked out because they might actually be stopping violent crime. And so this weird-haired freak went on MSNBC and tried to say climate change was more dangerous.
When I go to D.C., I'm not afraid of losing my wallet so much as I'm afraid of losing my vote. I'm not afraid of losing my wallet so much as I'm afraid that my children's freedom to breathe will be stolen in a world where climate change policy is non-existent.
Honestly, I think we should just play that in the campaign ads for 2028. Also, Donald Trump dunking on the press during these briefings will never stop being funny.
You're building the big, beautiful ballroom.
Yeah.
Could we build a big, beautiful briefing room?
Yeah.
Technology.
Yeah. No.
More seats.
I don't want to do that. I don't want you to be comfortable. No, I don't want to make life comfortable.
Me either, Mr. President. See you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.